Tobias had recently hired actor Carl Weathers as a drama coach.
Do you see me more as the respected dramatic actor or more of the beloved comic actor?
Whoa. There's still plenty of meat on that bone. Now you take this home, throw it in a pot, add some broth, a potato. Baby, you got a stew going.
Dylan! You son of a bitch.
He's hooking. Damn, Rod, come on! What's the matter with you?
Tomorrow.
There is no tomorrow!
Alligator bit my hand off.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, tournament down in Florida. I hooked my ball in the rough down by the lake. Damned alligator just popped up. Cut me down in my prime. He got me. But I tore one of that bastard's eyes out, though. Look at that.
You're pretty sick, Chubbs.
Let's make the baby do the magic hand thing. Come on, baby. Do the magic hand thing.
Barbecue, huh? How do you like your ribs?
Before we get into this week's episode, as you may have already heard, especially from that little montage there, Carl Weathers passed away at the age of 76. So we're going to pour one out for Carl Weathers on this episode as he's in the first of the double feature, Predator. He's had a great career with so many good movies in the Rocky series. He had his own Action Jackson movie, Predator, of course, as I just mentioned, Happy Gilmore. He's been in a lot of great shows. He's had some starring roles, probably most recently in The Mandalorian as Greef Karga. So if you're listening, and after you listen, go watch Predator, go watch Rocky, go watch a Carl Weathers movie, and hope you enjoy the episode.
Sit back in your seats, get something to eat, and watch this movie. Don't let the kids see it, because, well, we'll let you hear the beginning first. Thank you.
All right, this week on Left of the Projector, we are doing another double feature. This week we have Predator and Predator 2, the 1987 and 1990 films, one being an Arnold Schwarzenegger film, of course, the other, I guess you could call it a Danny Glover movie. And with me to discuss, I have Keith and I have Joe Mayle. Thank you both for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yes, so I feel like everyone, we'll talk about both movies, but I feel like everyone is very familiar with Predator. It's like a movie that's always on TV. You could just throw it on and watch it at any moment. I was not as familiar with Predator 2. I'd seen it, but it had been a long time. So I don't know. Like, do you think that? I mean, I don't know which one of you I was telling this before. Like, it's kind of amazing the through line that the two movies has. That they could have easily just been like, we're just going to have another movie that has nothing to do with the first one, which is what most franchises do. But here they actually gave you a through line, and it's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think these two movies, there's so much under the surface, right? Like watching Predator, and I think if you ask anybody about Predator, they'll kind of lump it in with the other Schwarzenegger movies and the other action movies of the 80s, the Rambos, the Last Action Hero, that sort of stuff. But upon like a more modern viewing, like watching it now, it's pretty clear that the film creators are trying to say something. It's very obvious, I find. And then watching them back to back, Predator 2 right after, I think they say in Predator 2 it's 10 years later, even though they only made the movie like 3 years later. But those themes continue, and they're almost extrapolated into like their satirical end, like a bigger form of the satire we see in the first one. And then, of course, there's like a 12-foot-tall alien running around shooting people with laser guns and net guns and stuff. So something for everybody, I guess I'll say.
Yeah, so I just rewatched them as well. And it just struck me how much, like when you take the two of them, it's such like a wonderful homage to the Reagan era. I mean, between the two, you basically have both kind of this like, you know, subtle critique of like kind of Iran-Contra and all of this sort of clandestine, like, you know, stuff that was going on in sort of the mid to late Reagan era. But then you also have this like, just like utterly almost like absurdist, urban decay kind of take in part two, taken to like, it's just like insanest extreme where there's just literally like, you know, urban warfare going on in the streets of Los Angeles. And it's just like, you know, it's such a, like, you know, I think I'm very much a sort of critique of that, just like the whole tropes of that era, basically.
Yeah, the saying you were, as you were saying Iran-Contra, I'm like, I know someone's going to say Iran-Contra first. And that's like the first vibe I get from the original movie. It's just, you know, people being sent off to kill leaders of, you know, of a random country that they don't like, you know, their left political movement or whatever it is. Like, nothing is very explicit in the first movie. Like, it's kind of, you know, like there's Russians there that are working with the so-called rebels, and you never really get like any real details, which I guess is kind of how it is in real life. You don't get details until 20 years later when they declassify everything, but it's all like very subtle. And I think a lot of people watch this and like, oh, it's just a cool movie where a predator fights Arnold Schwarzenegger and he gets him in the end. And I think a lot of people miss it because I don't know. It's like, it's as much political message as movies at the era, the ones you said, Joe, but also think of like RoboCop and like other movies like that. There's a clear political message, and especially Predator 2 being made in 1990. It's kind of hard to believe that movie was made. It doesn't really fit in with a lot of movies that came out then.
Yeah, I almost think of these movies as like conservative fever dreams from the times of... You know how if you, even today, how conservatives have just convinced themselves that like if you go outside in New York City, you'll be like shot. That's how I think they view urban areas in the way Predator 2 depicts Los Angeles. Just there's multiple full pitched battles going on at any point between the drug gangs and the cops. At one point, they even say the Jamaican shot down a helicopter, which if that ever happened in the United States, like that would be like the end of the world, right? But that's just what these people think is going on. And I think when you take it in conjunction with the first one, and the way I really think about this, like you said, Evan, in the first one, they never name the country. They never tell you who the, let's call them guerrillas are, the South American fighters. They never say like they're part of a group or anything. They have a Russian there for a reason that's never explained. And Carl Weathers, whose name I believe is Dylan in the movie, just kind of loosely says like, oh, we've been after this place for months. If they got these weapons, they'd be across the border. Like never saying what border, never saying what their political aims are. It's just sort of like a hodgepodge of basically what American foreign policy and what American media was at the time of just, all right, we're dropping Schwarzenegger or Stallone into some area. They're going to kill a bunch of people. We're going to have this rah-rah patriotism. But in Predator, you find out it's all a lie, right? It's all bullshit. And it's really funny how the first third of the movie is, it could be its own action movie of just commandos in the jungle killing, I don't know, Sandinistas, and there's a Russian. But then you have this whole other side of it in which it really is making clear it's making fun of those movies and also the kind of thought process behind them.
And I think what's also ripe with what I love, I mean, everyone loves an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with, you know, great one-liners. There's no era in film better than the 80s when it came to action movies and like one-liners. And that's why like they could make this movie and throw Arnold in there and be like, oh yeah, he's just going to be like the tough guy. But it is interesting that he ends up, you know, kind of, I don't want to say rebelling, but realizing that he had been had, that like he has morals too in the movie, which I think is, I mean, interesting, is that he kind of has like, we don't do certain kinds of kill missions, but we'll do rescue missions. And they bring him in because it's a rescue mission, so he thinks, and then it's actually, you know, not a rescue mission. So I think they, I don't really know where I'm going with that, but I think it's like standard Arnold stuff with like, I think your words you said, like a hodgepodge of like political, it was just kind of like the collective mindset of people in the 80s, like Russia bad, South America bad, America good.
I
mean,
the thing is though, is I see the movie as like in many ways a very like kind of a critique of that whole, you know, worldview in a lot of ways, right? Because I think the thing that's so interesting, right, is that like as Joe was saying, is that, you know, he wouldn't have done this sort of thing, like, right, if he knew what he was getting into. And sort of one thing I actually find very interesting about both films is that they're both very, like, highly critical of, like, the neocon federal government, right, in terms of, like, the shadiness of sort of everything that's going on. And the fact that, you know, Arnold basically is like, you know, no, we don't do this kind of thing, sort of very much suggests that it's like, you know, saying this is wrong, this is not appropriate. It is also really interesting in, like, the kind of unit he is in. Its relationship to the larger, like, military is never really clarified, right? Because he's like, why'd you skip out on that job? And he's like, as if, like, what military unit would have the option to, like, pass, right? Like,
there must be mercenaries, right? Like, that's what I took them.
Well, yeah, but they call him major. They keep saying major. They're like, we all have our orders. And I'm like, are they in the military? Are they not in the military? Like, what is this, like, special forces kind of thing going on, right? And it's just like, it's a bit, like, very sort of unclear, but I think it is very much, the movie is, like, very heavily critical of the kind of shadiness. And yeah, like, that when he figures out that he's been had, he's, like, you know, like, infuriated, because this is not the kind of thing he thinks is acceptable.
Keith, I'm so glad you said that, because when he, in the very beginning, he says, and I think it's subtle how they name so many countries that they've gone into. I think they say, like, Dylan says, Dutch, you've worked in Berlin, but passed in Libya. And then another one says, like, do you remember Afghanistan? Do you remember Cambodia? Like, mentioning all these countries that they've been at war in. But I wrote down in my notes when they talked about, like, how he passed on one of these missions, are you allowed to say no in the army? Like, is that how that works? You can just yeah. be like, ah, not for me. Sounds dangerous. I'm out. Like, it's so, and I almost think they're, like, saying, like, there's not a lot of thought behind this foreign policy. Like, we're going to all these places, shooting whoever, like, yeah. appears like a bad guy, and maybe we'll figure out some questions later.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it is. And he even says at one point, he's like, why don't you just use the regular army? Right. And I was like, who the hell are you guys? Like, who, like, what is your position in relationship to this? And it's like, it's a really interesting kind of unclarity in the movie.
Yeah, because they are. And if you look at, like, the IMDb or Wikipedia, they all have, like, sergeant first class, sergeant, major. So, like, they all have typical army, you know, ranking names. But where they, you know, it almost strikes me as, like, some special ops group that's, like, off the grid, but is the military. I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter, but it is. It's very much that whole, we're just going to send a bunch of people in that's authorized by, like, the CIA. Because I don't think they ever say CIA, but in the IMDb or Wikipedia, does he say CIA?
It says that Dylan is with CIA. Oh, and that
he does say CIA.
The chopper that got hit had, like, CIA dudes in it.
Okay, yeah. So it did. Okay. So because it says CIA operative, and it notes that he was his Vietnam War buddy. So I guess they, you know, knew each other from past war, and they're like, oh, we're going to bring these guys back in the fold because they're just the best at what they do. And like, the action scenes in this movie are absolutely flawless. They're just awesome. All the shots, like the booby trapping of the, like, he pushes the truck when he gets to the village with all of the, like, the Russians, and just launches the truck in, like, all the, it's just, the action scenes are marvelous.
That is one thing I wanted to mention. And before we move on from this, I do think part of the mystique craziness is that Arnold Schwarzenegger has a very thick European accent in this movie, and it is never explained. And his name is Dutch. So they're literally just being like, yeah, this guy's like, you know, whatever. He's got the guns. He looks like an American, even though he's clearly not. But roll with it, because we don't put too much thought into these things. But Evan, in the attack that you're talking about, like the first one that could be its own movie, halfway through when they're just, I'm pretty sure they start the attack with, like, that bomb on a truck, and then they all shoot grenade launchers and stuff. And I just remembered, like, they're supposed to be rescuing hostages. Like, they are just calling in every single missile they have. They're just tossing grenades everywhere. Apparently miniguns are, like, standard issue at this point, like, walking around. And then they get to, like, the room, and they're like, oh yeah, the hostages are dead. And it's like, yeah, wonder fucking why you guys, like, nuked this place. Yeah. It was just such, like, a clusterfuck where they're just all the 80s action that you can hope for, right? Like, guy runs in, shoots the M16 from his hip, automatic fire, and then they get to the end and they're like, oh, the hostages are dead. Like, whoa, how did that happen? I can't believe
Jesse
the Russians
Ventura
did that.
Is so awesome in this movie, I have to say. Like, of all, like, the non-Arnold people in the first one, Jesse Ventura also has, like, such, like, the best lines. I think he gets shot and he's like, I don't have time to bleed. Yeah. You know, he's just
I
like...
I thought that was one of the funniest parts in the movie, and it's not because of Ventura, but it's what the guy, he's like, oh.
You're hit. You're bleeding, man.
I ain't got time to bleed.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. Like, I saw that as, like, a very hilarious, he's like, okay, whatever the hell that means. Like, it's just kind of like almost making fun of him for being the, like, stereotypically, like, you know, sort of one-liner action hero. Like,
I mean, I guess you could say it is almost like a parody of itself of an action movie as an action movie, which I guess at this point it's since 87. There's been a lot of action movies in the earlier 80s too. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess you said, Keith, it's like, I guess you would really put the movie as a critique of all these things more intentionally than maybe I'm giving McTiernan credit for, who I will have to make a note. I said this on the Running Man episode, or I think because he also did Running Man. He was actually arrested for wiretapping another producer that he was trying to, like, get information on, and then was blackballed from Hollywood.
Oh, wow.
It's the most amazing story. You have to Google That's him after. His last movie, I think, was Rollerball, the remake. And then his career was over.
But I'll say, I think that's the thing I actually love about movies, that, like, the critique is so, like, subtle that, like, it, you know, because anything that's just too didactic and just beats you over the head with it, you're just like, this is lame, right? Like, it walks that line so perfectly that, like, you still, like you said, many people just enjoy it and they're just like, this is just like a great action film without even have to really think about, like, any underlying meaning. And then when you kind of watch it a bunch of times and you step back, you're like, there's actually, like, a lot going on here. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely take this to be, I found some of the quotes from McTiernan and some of the writers where they're pretty explicit in that, like, this is a satire. I also think, as you mentioned, Evan, like, with the casting, right? So there's Jesse Ventura, Carl Weathers, Arnold Schwarzenegger, a bunch of, like, just typical action stars. And they are so over the top with their masculinity. They're telling jokes about pussy and doing that, like, arm wrestling thing. And they all have their shirts cut off and stuff. And it goes perfect during the first third, where they get to be the American badass and say their, like, one-liners of stick around as you throw a knife into a guy and stuff. And then when they meet the Predator, just a more advanced form of a more advanced soldier, I guess I would say, they just get absolutely fucked up. And a bunch of them break. They have mental breakdowns. They get killed. And I think there's a really interesting parallel between how the Americans view their enemy, the unnamed gorillas in the forest, and how the Predator views the Americans, right? There's a very interesting sequence where right before the attack, the Predator is looking at them from up high with his heat vision, and then it goes to Dutch looking at the camp through his binoculars. And I really take this sense of, like, in some ways they're saying, like, oh yeah, like, Americans think they're all tough and shit because they've got, like, all the best weapons, all the best gear, they have the best transportation. And of they like to talk about how they, you know, to put it in modern parlance, like, killed a bunch of 14-year-olds in Afghanistan or something like that. But if you actually went against somebody who knew what they were doing, as in this Predator, like, you guys are going to get your shit kicked in.
And that's why I actually think the inclusion of the character of Anna is such a brilliant choice, because, like, her presence amongst them, like, gives that sense that, like, the Predator has, like, equalized this all, right? They're like, they're all in the same boat now. It doesn't matter that these are, like, badass soldiers, and this is, like, it's like, it has turned them all into equally kind of, like, scared, defenseless figures, because they're just so overpowered by this, you know, more sophisticated enemy, essentially.
Both were talking, like, you look at the Predator as being, like, kind of like he has more advanced technology, obviously. He has his heat vision, and he's being able to see. He obviously has advanced tech, but he's one person, one alien, and able to just wreck this entire, you know, blue, black ops, whatever crew. And I think about it maybe as like almost like a parallel even to like the Vietnam War, where Americans go chomping in being like, we have all the tech, like you were just saying, Joe, and we're going to fuck up these Vietnamese, and they just destroy them. I mean, granted, you know, there were heavy losses on both sides, but they went home with lots of losses and their tail between their legs, you know, with the big L.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm so glad you mentioned Vietnam. As you said, Evan or Keith, I'm sorry, I can't remember, but they specifically mentioned Vietnam at one point. And then also the scene where they're, not the first scene, but the second scene, they're in the helicopters riding in, really reminds me of the Vietnam image of guys in a helicopter riding through the jungle, blaring rock music while they're telling each other crude jokes and loading their weapons in red light. And the only thing it was missing was the song wasn't Fortunate Son. If it had been Fortunate Son, I would have been like, all right, they're being too obvious with it. But it really reminds me of Vietnam. And I think that's a purposeful choice, especially because they mentioned yeah, the war and acknowledge it.
And like, when Platoon came out the year before this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
know,
yeah.
Like, they're probably making this when Platoon is like in the theater,
and,
you know.
And I definitely, upon this most recent watching and just trying to, you know, think more deeply about it because of, you know, the podcast, was that like, I think that is a big part of like the idea of like his cloaking technology is like kind of the frustration that Vietnam soldiers felt with the jungle, the inability to find their targets, taken to its like ultimate extreme. Like you literally like can't see them with your eyes, right? They are like actually invisible. Was like a really interesting kind of choice within this, you know, post Vietnam sort of landscape and the sense of like jungle warfare and things like that.
Yeah, they have them move through the trees too, which I find very interesting because you would think an alien would teleport or fly around in a ship or something, but the Predator, you know, moves through the trees by jumping in with his cloaking. They're very much saying like, he's using the environment to beat you, that sort of stuff.
The scene that I always love when I like, if I turn on the movie, I'm like, I have to watch to this part. Just the whole Arnold Schwarzenegger, like building his like trap that he's setting for him. Like he's clearly like very intelligent. He's now realized there's something that he can't see. Yeah. So he has to fight unconventionally, like the way he built that trap. And even if you're watching it for the first time, you think that he's actually, the Predator is being lured into one way and he's actually lured him in a second way, you know, defeating this extremely advanced soldier. And so, I mean, in the end, you could say that America, quote unquote, wins because the Predator dies. But in reality, they really lose because everything that they came to do was destroyed.
Yeah, the very like return to like the primal, like now I'm going to use nature kind of like against you to kind of like flip the script is like, I mean, it's a very interesting choice in the sense of like, you know, their advanced weapons had essentially done nothing for them. And it's like basically the most sort of simplistic, you know, sort of homemade, you know, arsenal that actually allows him to win.
Keith, I think you're right. I think it's, you know, they only have any success against fighting the Predator once they let go of the more advanced weapons and systems and tactics that American troops have relied on since there has been an American military, right? I think when he fights the Predator at the end and along with the traps, I think he has like two grenades from his grenade launcher that he ties onto sticks and turns into spears. But for the rest of it, there's nothing. If you only saw that scene, you wouldn't be like, this is an American commando. You'd be like, this is just a guy who looks like he lived in the jungle because he covered himself in mud, like a Tarzan figure almost, right? He's swinging from the branches. He's laying the traps, as you mentioned, using his environment, and he challenges it to kind of a fist fight even. And so it really takes a turn where that's not the Schwarzenegger we're used to seeing in 80s action. We're used to seeing him dual wielding machine guns, walking from the hip, shooting down Cubans or blowing up a Venezuelan hospital or something. But in this one, he like just completely changes into something different. He's no longer the American badass. He's just a guy who has to rely only on himself.
And I think that's a similar thing you see in Predator 2, where it's like, you know, they're high tech, cooling system that's like super tech, and they're like, we got it all figured out, and that ultimately fails them, right? Like it just completely implodes upon them, and they just like, it's like, you know, it's Danny Glover sort of stabbing him with his own thing. That's actually like, it ends in like similarly, like another like hand to hand combat kind of like scenario.
Yeah. I guess it's a good like segue into, because as we talked at the beginning of the, them being a very, like, it's a kind of a through line of the two movies. So obviously at the end of the movie, Arnold and Anna are the only people that survive. And like you said, it's 10 years later, but it's only, you know, it doesn't matter when the movie came out. It came out 10 years later, whatever, forget that. But the thing I'm curious is, like, as you think about what happened between in those 10 years, obviously Arnold Schwarzenegger was debriefed. He had to tell everyone about this ridiculous predator he's killed. But it seems like when it comes to the next movie, already either the CIA or the whoever it is who's tracking him, you know, the government, the DOD, they know now that there's like at least one, if not more, of these predators. They've like learned about them. They know they go to LA because it's apparently like the hottest summer, and that's why the predators come. And it's, you know, our country, our world is, you know, imploding because of climate change. But I like to think in my head, like, it would be awesome to see a movie that's in between these two.
Well, Anna like, makes,
instead of making a remake,
Anna makes the same point, I think, about like that the there something came when it was like the hottest summers in whatever Central American country. That. And she's like, and this summer is like very hot. And like, so it's like, yeah, there's like, there's this weird temperature thing. It's not, they don't really flesh out exactly why that would, I guess the body heat, but that would almost negate that, right? But I don't know.
I'm going to geek out on you guys for a little bit.
Okay.
Because I am a huge nerd of this Predator / Alien universe. Like, I've read a ton of books, a ton of comics, etc. And at the first movie, the kind of fandom consensus is they didn't know what they were saying with when it came in the hottest summer. But by the second one, when they established it's LA, is that the Predator is like a cold-blooded creature. Mm-hmm. And so that it needs heat to live. And they get into some of its more details. Predator 2 kind of set off like the expanded universe of this stuff. It's actually where the alien tie comes in, because you see the alien head in his trophy room. That's that. I hate to do this. Can I say one more thing about Predator 1 before we?
Oh yeah, yeah. I didn't mean
over?
To like.
End, oh no, you're good.
Yeah, but just
feel free to move this around if you need to. But in my opinion, my favorite scene of the first movie, and the one that really sets out what the filmmakers are trying to do, is the scene where one of the soldiers is killed and Mac starts. He loses his mind and he just starts shooting into the jungle wildly. And the rest of the team runs up and they don't stop to question him. They don't say anything. They just pick up their guns and they start shooting. And they unload probably like thousands of bullets in this 20-second time frame, hit absolutely nothing, achieve nothing at all. And that to me is like what the filmmakers are saying about American policy. It's just a bunch of scared American soldiers firing blindly into the South American jungle, not doing anything at all, just showing off their guns. And it is just a total wash. And I found this quote from McTiernan, who explained this scene. Apparently this is in like the DVD commentary. And he said he included it to quietly ridicule the desire to see pictures of guns firing. The whole point was the impotence of all the guns, which was just exactly the opposite of what I believed I was being hired to sell. So he's saying like, you guys want like fucking guns and bullshit? Here you go. And that to me is just so funny and such a good way to like summarize what is going on in this era of just, let's just go fucking shoot some guns and see what happens. Oh, nothing. Oh, well. So that's the end of my diatribe.
Yeah.
That totally reminds me of some shit that like Paul Verhoeven says on, you know, like Starship Troopers or RoboCop like commentary is, he just wants like the most blood, the most explosions, because that's what like the studio, that's what people want to see. But he's not doing it just to do it. He's doing it as like a statement on something.
Yeah.
And it makes it almost more poignant that he's literally doing it for that reason. So
yeah,
that's a respect to McTiernan.
Another last comment I want to get on Predator 1, and we can kind of loop this into some of the exaggerated portrayals of certain groups in Predator 2, is like, I mean, like, it, you know, it has a cool aspect to it, but I always do find it a bit cringe in Predator 1, this idea of like the Native American tracker kind of who just like senses it mystically the way no one else can. It's just like, he feels it. I mean, it seemed to me, and you know, we could say that maybe they were being satirical in the way they are with a lot of things, but play a lot of these tropes that like Native Americans just have this more, they're closer to nature. They have this more, you know, just intimate feelings towards the natural world that I'm always just like, All right, you know, give me a break. Come on, like, but
Keith, I'm so glad you said that because I have in my notes, instead of having the Native American guy use the environment to kill the predator, they have the German guy do it.
Yeah.
Which is just so wild.
Named Dutch.
Yeah.
Named Dutch. Well,
they
yeah.
They do a similar thing with like predators where, you know, they're like dropped in the game preserve where it's like the Japanese guy like takes him on with his sword, right? It's like these mystiques of like, oh, we're gonna go head to head and like just really, you know, he's like cuts himself with his knife, and it's like, it's just like very much he's like, oh, these are just these like preternatural warrior cultures. And it's just like, yeah, like okay, if you're making a satirical point, like I'm here for it, but if not, like this is a little much, like
Yeah, I thought that was interesting how they were like, this is the most Native American man ever. And he can like
great actor though. He's in like,
oh yeah, he's 48
Hours and a bunch of other stuff. Or sorry, 48 Hours and, you know, sort of like fun movies like that from the 80s. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I said at the beginning, like Predator 2, I mean, maybe when I'm thinking back to like late 80s, early 90s movies, I guess it does kind of fit into that kind of era, especially when I think of Danny Glover being kind of cast. And one of the only movies I can think of where he's really the star as opposed to like the co-star when I think of, you know, all of the fuck is that series?
Lethal Weapon
series. Like, it's kind of like Mel Gibson and him are together. And in this, it's like he gets his moment in the sun of being like the main guy, and they have, you know, other, again, also a pretty good cast, Gary Busey, and then Bill Paxton, who has just some the most classic
only
misogynist lines.
Only actor to have been in all three series, Aliens, Terminator, and Predator.
Oh, shit, you're right.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
That was a trivia
question
at the pub one time. It's like he's, you know, he gets freaking just destroyed by Arnold in Terminator 1. He's like one of the goons that like where he gets his clothes from. But he has, he has real roles in the other two, but he's like just the smallest cameo in the first Terminator. Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. I was thinking he might've been in one of the later Terminators that I haven't seen. I didn't realize.
No, it was like when, you know, when the Terminator first shows up and he needs clothes and there's these three just kind of like deadhead scumbags that he like gets them from, like one of them is
Bill. Oh man, that is a good nugget. But I think we already briefly said like the setting of Predator 2, like the first 15 minutes is kind of just fucking insane.
Yeah.
Like it's almost hard. That you think about, I didn't look at too many quotes on what Stephen Hopkins said about Predator 2, but it's very clear he took the through line to like its logical conclusion from the jungle to a major city and saying, this is what it's like to live in the city. It's almost like a jungle. It's like literally war. There's the Jamaicans and there's just people killing each other over drugs, seemingly for no reason. There's just a bunch of people killing each other. And then Danny Glover comes in and just rips his car through and like gets through. And, you know, I really just want him to say like, you know, I'm too old for this shit, you know, wrong franchise. But like, it's just, I don't know, that the first 15 minutes, I didn't remember it. And it was just blew my mind.
I think the opening is really purposeful. It is written by the same brothers who wrote the first one.
Yeah,
I'm looking for their
Thomas
name.
Brothers.
The Thomas Brothers, thank you.
Yeah.
And I love even the first 30 seconds because how it starts is the camera is on all these trees, right? And it's like flying camera and it looks like the jungle. Very similar to like Predator 1. You're like, all right, we're going back to the jungle. And then it picks up and it says Los Angeles. And I think it's 1997, which is 7 years in the future of when this is made. And I really take that as like a, okay, like the last movie was about American foreign policy and how you've gone around the world, like destabling all these South American governments and sending troops in to fight these drug traffickers. And now that's come home to roost. Now it is, the drug war has come home. Evan, I think you mentioned the Jamaicans. I think it's really interesting how the two rival gangs are the Jamaicans and the Colombians, i.e. weed and coke, as in like the representation of these drugs. And they are just over the top. again, like you said about the Native Americans, Keith, like the Colombian at one point in the very beginning takes a handful of cocaine and throws it in his face. And I just was like, is that how you do cocaine? Like, I thought there was a different process.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Jamaicans are like covered in voodoo dolls and they get in a limousine and it's all smoky and stuff like that. I think it's that first 15 minutes is wild, but also just like shoving it in the audience's faces of like, okay, here's your fucking drug war. Enjoy your movie.
Yeah. And see, that's why I actually think that they chose, despite the fact that, I mean, there's really no like narrative reason to have it not set in like 1990. I think they did this like 10 years later thing. So then they could make the argument that this is like a dystopian future. You know, this is what city. And I think a lot of people in 1990 would have thought, yeah, that's what cities will look like in 7 years. Cause that's like, in many ways, it's like one of the, you know, sort of moments of just intense kind of urban crisis and the, you know, the sense of like the crack epidemic and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I did think that was another really interesting point is like in choosing these groups as like the Colombians, and clearly there's a sense of also like sort of the statement about like globalization and the way in which these like new immigrant populations that were really starting to stream in like the 80s and 90s were sort of conceived of as like this growing problem versus like what we would think of as like, you know, typically if it was an LA movie, the you know, gangs would be African American or Mexican American in most of the films of that time, right? Like to give it this very international gloss was actually like a fascinating decision on their part. Yeah.
And the other thing that I noticed about that first 15 minutes, aside from just the chaos, they also really ramped up like the sensationalism of the news and violence. Like they had the news reporter who like comes into play a few scenes where, you know, where Danny Glover like punches him out later, or I don't know if it's him or Bill, one of them punches him out, but just like the need to make the things that are happening, like the crime and violence of urban cities as like, this is the, your entertainment. Like they're, you know, I'm trying to think of any other movies at that time that were doing that. I can't think of, I mean, again, I will say RoboCop again.
Yeah.
Definitely played up on that a lot.
They have a lot of the same. There's a lot of same like things going on with both those movies. Yeah.
100%. They both take place in a city that's kind of being kind of like collapsing in the near future. You know, dystopia type of situation where, and the other note I'll say before we go past just this opening of it is they're also very explicit multiple times that like the mayor of the city is like off skiing in Tahoe or, you know, not present. It's very much also, they don't say like, it doesn't matter what party he is either. It's just like the government doesn't care about their city. It's essentially they're left to just fend for themselves. And I think that is actually, when you get to the 90s after the Reagan era, I mean, that is really what it was in real life, and especially in urban environment. Well, more than urban, but.
Yeah, I think you hit on two things there that I think are very interesting is, you know, this movie 1990, if we take Predator 1 as sort of like a critique satire of American foreign policy, this one's almost more of a domestic policy critique. In the Soviet Union hadn't formally dissolved yet, but it was kind of on its way out, right? I believe the Berlin Wall fell in 89. So between these two movies, and people were much more focused internally. Clinton ran on his like anti-crime platform. I think the crime bill would be passed sometime after this came out. Everyone was obsessed about, you know, Just Say No coming out of Reagan. Of course, like I think HW ran that like Willie Horton ad that was like, black people are going to sell drugs and murder you. And everyone really started to look internally. And it really makes me think that like, this is the focus and that they're trying to say, like, is this what you guys think LA is? Like, it's not as horrible as you're making it out to be. The other thing I think you mentioned, Evan, was the media. I immediately thought of when we see the kind of like tabloid guy who, I think he gives himself a name, like the Hardcore Report or something like that. I immediately thought of Matt Drudge. Who, if folks don't know, Matt Drudge was like this conservative, the Drudge Report, this conservative blogger in the 90s who really kind of kicked off like the Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, red meat type of I don't think reporting is the right word. Content is probably a better word. And he eventually was right about the Lewinsky scandal. But for years, he was just this crackpot guy who would write, like, you know, Hillary Clinton. He did, like, a lot of, like, the Clinton kill list and, like, how she drank baby blood and stuff like that. And what made me think about that is at one point he says, let's check the scoreboard. And he says five dead, like, trash drug dealers and one dead amazing cop. And I was like, oh, like, this is them saying, like, this is fucking entertainment. There's a scoreboard to the news. You people are ridiculous. And that was really what came to my mind. And I think they fucking nailed that, because, like, that guy, you could put him in a movie in 2024 and he could stand in for any of the right wing freak bloggers who are, like, I don't know, like, harassing trans people on TikTok or something like that. I think the media portrayal in this movie is pretty wild.
Tony Pope, hardcore special report.
Hardcore special report. Hell yeah.
He was entertaining. He was super, super entertaining. I would agree. Yeah.
He was dressed ridiculously too, like very 90s.
Well, and that's, like, actually one of the things I thought was interesting about this movie too, and I'm not quite sure what point they were necessarily trying to make per se, but, like, the Danny Glover character in many ways is, like, a kind of a reactionary. Like if you actually look at one point, they pull him up, they're like, a long record of, like, police violence and harassment things. And, like, and many times he's like, he's just breaking all the rules. He's like, I don't really care about, like, the law. And, like, you know, the guy gets up in his face and he's like, you know, you're not going to stop me from, like, doing this. We're fighting a war out there. Like, we're getting killed. We need to, like, and it's just like, when you actually kind of take a back and step away, you're like, you're kind of like this kind of rogue cop who just kind of, like, is, like, very violent and very kind of, criminal in a lot of ways. Like, yeah.
It's funny. I didn't remember what that guy Drudge looked like. And when you Google him, there's one of the main pictures is of him wearing kind of like a straw hat. And it is exactly the same fucking hat that Tony Pope is wearing in Predator 2. Wow. Did, like, he base his personality on Tony Pope or whatever from Predator 2? Oh, it's really, God. Like, if you Google it, it's like, I was trying to share my screen, but it wasn't working. It's kind of uncanny, like, the resemblance of the two of them, but
I digress. Oh, this is spot on. Yeah, they both got the same, right? Like, dumbass white guy tourist hat. Hardcore special report.
Yeah, no, but to like, to the point of, like, Danny Glover being a reactionary, I think he completely is. And it's the thing that they play up in this movie, which is, like, I think Danny Glover is, like, bread and butter with Lethal Weapon, is, like, the cop that doesn't play by the rules. Like, that's like his character in a bunch of movies. I mean, nothing wrong with that. It just was the kind of style of cop. What you were supposed to think is, like, oh, he will go at any length to get the bad guy.
Yeah.
And in this case, that's kind of what he's doing against the wishes of, I guess, the feds come in because they're tracking. We didn't even mention the Predator yet in Predator 2, but we now have the Predator that's now stalking people. And I think we also didn't maybe mention this in the first movie, and maybe it's a good time to say it, is the Predator we're meant to believe is he's attacking the drug gangs because he's going after what he deems, like, the strongest challengers to his own, you know,
yeah.
He wants to fight the strongest of America. And in the first, he's fighting soldiers, and in this, he's fighting drug dealers. And so it's interesting. You don't have any idea why the feds are coming in if you never had seen it before. Like, oh, the feds are coming in. Why are they investigating the murderers of, you know, these things? And so I that's where the through line comes in that is just so awesome about the two movies as, like, a back-to-back.
Yeah, in, like, extended Predator lore, and this is hinted at the first one, but I don't think they really flushed it out until the second one, is that the Predator is there to collect trophies. And the opening scene of the first one is we see the Predator ship, and then there's, like, a breakaway craft that comes in and drops off the Predator that we know is in the jungle. And in the second one, it kind of gets established because they actually wrote some books and video games that kind of came out the same year as this movie. Is that the Predator, these, like, individual Predators who go to these war zones are there to test their tactics and their weaponry. And their thinking is, where are we going to find the best warriors to test ourselves against in these war zones? And so they try and fight the people if they get killed, which is why the predators at the end of this movie come and take the body because they want to like study it and stuff. And the thought process here being is that LA is a war zone, right? And that it has devolved into this is one of the most violent places on Earth. So the predator is going to come here so that it can, you know, test out its new skills, which is, I mean, every movie does this, but it has like new weapons, new tactics and stuff like that. And that's sort of a recurring theme throughout this extended universe is that they're always trying to fight, which is very interesting because they give every citizen a gun in this movie. Yeah. And so like on the train, when everyone pulls out a gun, the predator is like, I guess you guys are soldiers. You've all got weapons. And he just, you know, fucks them. Violates them. Yeah.
Well, he does have better tech in this too. Like some of the funniest bits are when the predator like listens to and then is able to record and use the voices of the different actors or the different characters. Like when he's hiding in the tree at the cemetery, he's like, want some candy to like the little, like, you know, he hears it from the kid. And then I think he says shit happens or something at one point. Like clearly like they're advancing their technology, and that like the added lore that I didn't know about makes sense. They're, you know, just they want to fight some drug dealers and kill Jamaicans, and it's like they're pinning. It's all, and it ends up being like that. They're like it. What's so funny is that no one knows how these people are dying except when they go into the Jamaican's apartment and they see like the spear. Like that's like the first tip off where the predator actually left evidence. Like you fucked up, predator. You left some shit behind.
Yeah. I mean, now I'm just geeking out about the predator. Yeah. But in the future movies, they carry like a liquid to like dissolve. I think even in the Alien vs. Predator movie, like dissolve all their weapons and dissolve their bodies and their in the aliens that they kill, which is kind of like the running fandom theory.
Yeah.
That they're like, oh, they found us out and they were able to kill us. Yeah. So our secrecy is the thing.
The trophy aspect is like, it's like, you know, it's clearly there. Like, remember he takes like the skull and the spine of, I think, Billy in the first one, and then like, yeah, he's clearly, but like, I mean, they really don't like fully until like Predators and Alien versus Predator, where it's like, I mean, Predators is literally like it's a whole planet they've turned into like a big game preserve essentially, right? But yeah, this sense that essentially, like, you know, it's clear this is always like, which gives you just like interesting sort of questions about like the civilization from whence these, right? So like clearly there's a sense of like honor amongst warriors. Like they let Danny Glover go, right? And they even hand him that gun at the end. So they don't like, they don't kill him. It's not purely this just like kind of like, you know, military sort of end. They clearly have this sense of like being these sort of like this warrior cast, right? That, you know, it's interesting to kind of speculate about like what their society kind of might look like, right? Yeah.
Well, it's like the opposite of, especially in Predator 1, where Americans just shoot first, ask questions later, and just carpet bomb whatever. The Predator is doing everything like meticulously. He's thinking about things. He's not killing just to kill. I mean, I guess he is to kill, but he's doing it as like some kind of ceremonial piece, or he's, testing out weapons, testing out new techniques, you know, because these are different, probably different environments from wherever the Predator's world is,
yeah,
you know, going into that. But
I think it's interesting how at one point they show him target the kid because the kid has like a toy Uzi, and then he realizes it's not a real gun, and he doesn't kill the kid. And I was thinking about that. And earlier I said, like, I think these movies are kind of like a portrayal of a conservative fever dream of how, you know, conservatives want every white person to like have a gun and be armed so that they can fight back against the vicious street gangs that are ruining our cities, like that sort of mantra. And
the purge.
The purge. Yeah, right. Like the purge. And that's what we see in this movie. Like it's a very fascistic society where all the citizens are armed, and I find kind of feel like the filmmakers are like, we can do this, but you're just turning the country into a war zone, and you don't know what you're gonna get when you do that. And of course it's science fiction, so they get fucked up by a giant robot in the metro subway. But like there is a point where everyone pulls guns on, I think like a gang is robbing somebody on the train or something.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like, is this dude who's like, how do you?
Yeah. Right. And like the grandma's got a gun and like the mom has a gun, and there's definitely this contrast between their version of America, where everyone is armed, everyone's ready to go, and then the Predator, which is not attacking children and lets, I cannot remember the female character's name, lets her go because she's pregnant. And he's like, this is not a combatant, right? And I found that to be a very interesting contrast between who the Predator attacks and who he doesn't. He also lets the girlfriend live, I believe. Evan, you mentioned the Colombian's apartment.
Yeah.
He doesn't kill.
Yeah. I think it's Maria is the female character.
Maria.
In Predator 2. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's why Anna in the first one, like Schwarzenegger's like takes the gun away from him. He's like, it's because you're not armed. Like, that's why he didn't like kill her and she was able to like escape when, you know, everything goes south and he ends up in the water. Is like the sense that like, he's like, yeah, no, this is not, you know, a challenge, or it's not. It's just like, there's this code, right? There's this kind of like warrior's ethic that like the Predator has about like who is and is not an acceptable target, right?
And I know this isn't the focus of our podcast, but that's a really interesting dynamic in Prey, as in the Predator in that movie is put in contrast with the European colonizers, right, against the Native Americans. And the Europeans imprison, I cannot remember the character's names in this movie, but they imprison the Native Americans regardless of if they are warriors or not. And that's definitely something that the colonizers did to the indigenous population. The Predator, on the other hand, does not. He doesn't attack the female character when she is, I believe she's bound at one point, and he sort of lets her go until she picks up a weapon. And it's definitely kind of like a, almost like shit-talking humanity of like, you guys are savages. You'll just shoot or kill anyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That at some point, I want to do that. Prey is an interesting entry in the, like the, I don't know, the universe of like the Predator. Yeah. I'm curious if they're going to have future ones that somehow like are at different periods in time. Like how far back does, you know, like the Predator universe go?
Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought the tech thing was off, because it's like, you guys got like ships and you can travel like across the universe, but like you can only shoot like a little knife versus like a laser, because we're now like, you know, 200 years before, like, I don't know. I thought it was a little bit too on point with, but I mean, they had to do that because they couldn't, if he was still shooting, like, you know, whatever the hell incendiary laser, you know, targeted things that he has in the other ones, like obviously no one in the 1700s could have stood up to, right? Like, yeah.
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 So, oh, go ahead, Joe.
I was just going to say like Evan, I think you said they, you hope they do more historical movies. I think that is what they're planning. You know, they kind of explain where the pistol at the end of Predator 2 comes from. That comes from Prey. And that was kind of like when this movie came out, everyone was like, what the fuck is this? Like, what? Who is this guy? Like, does this have any connection? And of course, it's really before like the internet got popular. And so it was kind of this like long running, like, okay, you're just, it almost like a cliffhanger, but without any purpose. They eventually wrote a comic that explained it. It was like a pirate. And so there's stories out there, but of course, Prey kind of retconned that a little bit to be, this was from a trapper or something.
They're like French.
Yeah.
Predators, yeah.
There is like, to answer your point, Keith, about like why the technology is different, they have this just kind of keeping in line with like how they view themselves different than humans, the Predators being, is they try and scale their weaponry like to almost be fair, because they, you know, they could just, I imagine they have some sort, they do have nukes, right? As we saw in Predator 1, they could do that. But they try and always like test themselves to learn their tactics and stuff.
And that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. That pistol was kind of like the trophy that the Predators had taken from humanity. And so when Glover defeats them, humanity gets the trophy back, because they were saying like that was the best weapon at the time. That's kind of like just sort of the nerd background.
That makes a ton of sense too, because when you think about like Alien versus Predator and they do this like backwards montage to like the pyramids and stuff, they're like blasting away, right? Like, so yeah, that would be consistent. Yeah,
that's actually a good, just like the tech is a good segue, is that we didn't talk about is the simple fact that in Predator 2, like the goal of the entire the federal, like the feds or whatever agency this is, their goal is to get Predator tech, right? They want to capture and I guess presumably kill, if they have to, the Predator. I guess the idea is not to kill. They want to freeze him.
Yeah.
Which it turned out to be a really stupid plan.
Yeah.
But they like want to trap and get him to get his tech and then just sell this tech, or maybe not sell, use the tech for the military and then eventually sell it or whatever the, you know, whatever would happen to it once it's owned by the U.S. government. And then they would be, you know, like, because the U.S. is always interested in the best weapon. What's the next best weapon? We're going to build the better bomber, the better nuke, the better whatever. So it's very obvious, especially as you alluded to, Joe, earlier, is like this is about to be the end, official end of the Cold War. I mean, things progressed after that in maybe a different way. But there's still an arms race for the America to get the best tech. And it's clearly like the undertone of the movie, too, which I think is another one of those things where you could casually watch this and kind of look past that kind of and not think about it, you know, if you just were watching it simply as an action movie. But when you think about it that way, it's clear the goal of attacking and catching the Predator, not to learn about the Predator, but it's a profit off the Predator.
I thought it was interesting how, as you just said, Evan, they say the tech, like, not like, usually it's we're looking for other life forms, right? In sci-fi movies, they're like, yeah. Like intelligent life, like, oh my God, scientific breakthrough. And he's just like, think of the technology, like think about how sick this would be. And that really stood out to me because usually, at least in the other movies, there's like almost like a pretense of we just want to learn and like expand our understanding as a species. And this one, they just have like Gary Busey eyes bugging, just being like, what if we all had laser guns? That'd be so fucking cool, you know? The other thing is, like, I don't think it's ever gone good for someone if they're trying to capture the monster in any movie. As soon as they say that, I'm like, oh, no, dude, you guys are all going to fucking die. Like, you're going to fight this guy with glorified water guns that shoot snow at him? No way. You guys are fucked.
They spent 2 weeks learning its pattern. Like this guy's like spent like centuries, a millennia,
yeah,
like fighting people. And you think in like 2 weeks, you're going to capture the fucking Predator. Good luck, well, Gary Busey.
I mean, that's another thing in both films, I think, is actually a very, very like interesting aspect, is just how critical and kind of just like nefarious the government and the military in both films, you know, are portrayed in this sense that like they do not have good intentions, right? They just use people, that it's like very, very like cloak and dagger. And I actually think interestingly, it's not like a right wing anti-government sense, right? It's very much like a post Vietnam, post Iran Contra sense that like, when it comes to national security and foreign policy, like the US is just like really, really kind of fucked up, right? And like does like really awful clandestine sort of shit. And I mean, that is, I think, one of the really big messages from both films, that it is just like a just general lack of concern for human life or, you know, transparency, and just sort of out to, you know, kind of just do whatever it perceives to be in its interests.
And as Evan said, the mayor is on multiple occasions criticized for being on vacation, right? So the only representation of the government we have is the weird or the empty allusions to the mayor being gone, the spooky federal agency. I can't remember if they actually say what they're from. And then the cops, who the movie continuously like tells us like these are fascists, right? They like take away a camera from one of the media at one point. Bill Paxton's character says, hey, look, I'm on TV. And it's him. And it just says police brutality out of control. And he's like excited about it. Yeah. And it's him like choking a guy, a citizen down.
Yeah.
And like, that's very clear that they're like, he's a fucking asshole, but he's like cool about it. Yeah. Right. And so I think you're right, Keith, that like the depiction of the government in this movie and even in all of them is not good. Like it's certainly very critical and very far from what anyone would hope the government would be like. But I think it's pulling on the strings of
what the American government actually is.
Yeah. I had something about Bill Paxton. Like he has, just as purely, I think I mentioned before, like he has some of like the best lines, despite being like clearly just a, you know, kind of a shitbag. I mean, he's like, I guess you could say he's like a good cop in like a cop sense, but you know, he's hitting on the like the cops as soon as he arrives. He's then realizes, you know, I'm not shit really unless I, you know, stick with Danny Glover and, you know, get things right. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like
he's great comic.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like this, like this over the top sort of. But the thing that's funny is like they portray him as like kind of a scumbag. But when he comes in, the thing they don't like about him, he's like a cowboy who like does his own thing. Yes. And they're like, no, man, this is like you play by as a team, which is similarly this like not cool, like, you know, we cover for each other and we like, you know, like we don't, you know, you stay within the ranks. It's like, it's not the greatest mentality, right? Like,
did they call him like the Lone Ranger? I think they might have joked or something like that. Yeah. Like he's, yeah, the Lone Ranger. So he's clearly, you know, it's coming into like the big boy, you know, war zone. Because like that's the thing, like we said, like they constantly are referring to where they are as a war zone. He's telling, you know, Bill Paxton or Danny Glover's character is telling him very often, like it's not like what you're used to. And he actually, like, if you actually like the things that Bill Paxton does in the movie are actually like in the scheme of doing things, he's like able to track them, figure out where they are. It's like the meat plant. He's actually like, I mean, he may not be the toughest character because he dies. You know, Glover lives at the end. Mm-hmm. But like he's like a pretty, in the scheme of the movie, he's like a good character. You know, that's kind of a basic way to refer to him.
But. Yeah.
Was this movie, was Predator 2 successful? Did it actually like make money?
Great question.
Budget $20 million, made $57 million.
Okay.
So not nearly as.
That's like considered very successful in like the 80s and 90s. Like,
yeah. The first one, though, made $100 million on an $18 million budget. That's why they like greenlit the second one. Apparently, they actually he had to make the movie in less than a year, including the editing of Predator 2.
Wow.
And so they're like, we got to get this movie out before, you know.
Well, I mean,
I don't know, people lose interest.
It's just like, I mean, well, the first one is just, it's just like when you watch it, it's just I think it's so masterful largely because of pacing. I mean, I think I don't think there's a better movie that does the slow reveal of like the hidden enemy better than Predator. Like the way in which you're like bit by bit, you like figure out what this thing is, but it's not till like fairly late in the film you get like the full look, right? And I think that is actually like such an underappreciated thing that so many movies just botch. Like I was watching the last whatever, the Demeter, the like recent Dracula thing, and like they sprung like the full on Dracula just way too early, and I was like, you've ruined this movie. Like there's no going back from that. Like, yeah,
that's like a big thing I think with like Spielberg does it really well, especially I think of like Jurassic Park, where they you have an inkling of there being a monster but you don't see it. Like I also think of what's the movie where it's like a bunch of kids, like that they're like hunting a monster, and it's a bunch of, it's a Spielberg movie from like maybe 2005. I can't think of what it is.
Super 8.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
And like, it's the same idea where they like slowly give you the monster, like at the right time of the movie.
Yeah.
Right. Which I think is a really good point, that the first movie, you don't ever feel bored, even though there's like 30 minutes where like no one says anything.
Yeah.
You know, like someone I know who like doesn't like Predator was saying like the middle of the movie is very boring because nothing is really happening. But I think that all the stuff that's happening is like very subtle. And then I think when you dig into like what is actually happening as far as the politics of the movie and everything, that I think it, I mean, I don't agree with that, but
yeah,
I'll take it.
Another thing I thought was interesting, and I guess this pertains more, this definitely pertains more to the first movie, but I watched the trailer and they never show you the Predator. It's just, they show you like the heat vision, like the first person heat vision and stuff. So audiences came into this movie not really knowing what to expect. They never really even say it's an alien either. They just sort of say like commandos, the hunters become the hunted, et cetera, et cetera. And so as you guys were saying, you know, the slow reveal, I can't speak to how popular and how viewed trailers were at this point, But coming into the movie, audiences were naive. Like, people might have thought it was like a some sort of creature from the jungle, or like more of an animal, right? Something like that. And then, of course, when they get to Predator 2, and maybe this is the box office saying like, go, 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 go. Mm-hmm. It's the exact opposite. It's a massacre from the first 5 minutes of, okay, you wanted more pacing? Like, here you go. Massive shootout followed by alien massacre.
And that is something that I'm almost like envious of, because like at this point, I've seen it so many times. I don't even remember what my first viewing felt like. But even still, because it was such a thing, I'm sure I knew going into the film, I think that it was like this alien creature stalking them. Right. Like, to have actually had the experience of like not knowing like what the hell is it? That's like this, like that would have been, that would have been great. Yeah.
Well, so the cover, the poster for the Predator 1 is a picture of Arnold holding like his gigantic gun, and it has like the scope like image, like, you know, the bullseye on him. And I could easily see that if you didn't know anything about this movie in 1987, if I were at that era, I think you think it's like the Russians,
or it's like,
or
yeah,
like,
or it's
some,
like Commando 2. It's like, oh, it's going to be Commando mm-hmm. Part 2, basically, right? Like,
yeah, I don't think that you going in that, especially no internet, no, like, you know, people hearing about movies on before it comes out, all these things like that. You go into that movie, you don't really know what you're expecting. And I think, I'm envious of like being able to see that, to see a movie where you don't have any knowledge of anything beforehand. This is why I try, if like a new movie comes out, not to read too much, especially like a horror movie. I'm like, I want to know nothing. I want to go in and be like surprised. So don't tell me.
This actually, hearing you say that, Evan, it reminds me of the movie Cabin in the Woods. I'm not sure if you guys have seen it, but it was marketed as a horror movie, right? As a standard, kids go to a cabin in the woods, something kills them. And then you go in and you watch it. And I saw it in theaters, and it's a total satire. It's about how like there needs to be a monster movie or some sort of slasher movie at some point, or the world's going to end, right? And I could totally see that being the experience someone has watching Predator in the theater in 1987. Of just like, oh, cool, I'm going to go see Schwarzenegger, you know, shoot up a bunch of Russians or South Americans or whatever we're doing this year. And then all of a sudden his entire squad is massacred one by one. And they're a bunch of like crying babies, right? definitely a very interesting kind of way to frame that. And I've never thought about that before until right now.
Was Commando the movie before Predator that Arnold did,
like 1985, like, so like 2 years before, and like all, I mean, very like, if I were to see two posters, I would imagine they would look very, very similar, right? Like,
yeah, because the Commando poster is Arnold, like, not with a gun, but like his face is like blacked out, and he's like got his big bicep on the front. Oh, so there was one movie he did between the two, the Red Sonja.
Never seen it,
which I have not actually seen.
Yeah, never seen it. Yeah.
But then he did
Raw Deal.
I mean, I think it's just like, it's just so like for a 1980s, just packed with these Rambos and these Commandos, where it's like, you're like, it was such a, yeah, just such a reversal of like all of those dynamics that was just like, I think that's why today, like people just, you know, I don't know who the fuck your friend is, but like by and large, everyone I know just loves this film. Right. And it's like, and if you talk to people, it's often like the movie that they're like, oh yeah, I could just like watch that like a million times, right? Like, I mean, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia does a whole bit that he, like, Mac and Dennis just rewatch Predator like every week. Like,
I almost wonder if with the rush to make Predator 2, like you were saying, Evan, and how they gave him a year, is how, if at least the writers, I know it's not the same director, felt that like, almost they wanted people to understand the satire of the first movie. And when they didn't, they were like, okay, we're doubling down with this. Like, this is fucking, because like the thing that stands out to me so much in Predator 2 is just the absolute absurd lines that Glover drops, of like just the most cliche, like, action stuff that really doesn't even like make sense a lot. At one point he says, "You're cutting off my dick and shoving it up my ass." And I wrote like, that down, paused the movie and just said like, "What the fuck does that even mean?"
Yeah.
He calls him pussy face. He's like, "Your move, pussy face."
Okay, pussy face. It's your move.
you're like, you're one ugly motherfucker.
Yeah, right. Like when he kills him at the end, he says like, that's the thing, asshole. Shit happens. And I'm like, where did someone say that earlier in the movie or something? Or
yeah, someone.
Oh, someone said that? Because I was
one of the Jamaican guys is like, shit happens, and he's very like, you know,
All right. But it felt like every scene with him, they were like, all right, we got to get that cliche like punchline in, right? And it just felt so over the top that I wonder if they were just like, I can't believe these fucking guys didn't get what we were doing. Okay, let's just double it.
I think everyone can agree, like Predator 2 went like fucking hard, right? Like with the just like the intensity of the like, you're saying, you open up and you're like, This is kind of nuts. Like this is like an insane level of like, and you're like, yeah, you're like, this is, and that's the thing that's really, I mean, like I said, they said it 10 years in the future, I think. So this could be plausible as like, this is devolved this much, but like, I mean, Predator 1 is like a full on realism, right? Like Predator 2 is like a dystopia, right? This is not no one in 1990, as bad as you thought cities were, would have been like, oh yeah, like they're actually waging like actual guerrilla war in Los Angeles.
They
like,
shot down a helicopter.
Yeah. Like gangs are actually in control of the city. Like, you know, like it completely abandoned the, like, you know, the actual realism of the first one. And I think you're right. I think they did it in part to be like, okay, like we need to really make sure they're like getting that this is like an over the top, like intended mocking of a lot of these tropes. Because like, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think a lot of people could watch Predator 1 and just be like, that was just a kick ass movie, right? And not like,
the US military is so cool.
Yeah. Oh man. Like, it sucks that the Predator stopped that national security sort of operation. Cause like, that was probably important, right?
Like, it reminds me, I know it's like not for, I mentioned before, like very much like the Paul Verhoeven kind of satire of not RoboCop, I'm going to say like Starship Troopers, where from the beginning of Starship Troopers, it's very clear to me and probably most people that this is a satire again on like US military expansionism from the beginning of the movie. But there are also people who watch that movie and like don't see that. And it's the, they're unable to get to grasp these things because they immediately are putting, if you think of America as the good guy in quotes, these movies are going to not land in the same way the director is landing, which I think is why you might say Predator 1 just a good action movie, because you're rooting for America to do the coup or do the whatever, you know. Or in Predator 2, you're rooting for the cop. I mean, I guess in Predator 2, you're like rooting for the cops to stop the Predator, but then you're also like bombarded with just Jamaican and Colombian, just drug. I don't know. I just, it just always boggles my mind when people see these movies and are like, this is not a satire. This is a straight action movie. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah. I think it's a hard line to walk as a director. Cause I saw an M. Night Shyamalan movie recently, and just reading up what other people thought about it is they said Shyamalan's greatest like flaw as a director is that he doesn't trust the audience. It was the one, A Knock at the Cabin, and I'm not going to spoil it, but basically he alludes to some like spiritual event and it flat out states it at the end, like, and other directors wouldn't have said that. And I think that's a valid critique, but at the same time, like, as you said, Evan, like, you know, they'll make these movies that are just full on critiques of American society, and people will be like, that is so cool. Yeah. And like coming back to Starship Troopers, I always think about Verhoeven's quote where in the beginning of the movie, he shows a straight up Nazi flag, right? With the Nazi eagle. It doesn't have the swastika, but it has the Nazi flag. And the studio told him, you can't do that. That's a Nazi flag. And his response was, no, it's not. The colors are different. And then they let him leave it in. And people still didn't get what he was trying to say, right? Like,
they were wearing like Nazi uniforms.
100%. Neil Patrick Harris in that movie is wearing a Waffen SS officer's uniform. And people are still like, this is about how cool, how great the military is, right?
Well, they even play fucking football.
The book is. That's definitely true.
It's a conservative fascist take. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Starship Troopers. I mean, and Paul Verhoeven generally, and these, like, these are different directors, Predator 1 and Predator 2. But I think like to put like the two of them together, same writers, different, you know, locations. But I mean, anyone out there that has seen Predator, you know, a bunch of times and likes it, maybe you haven't seen Predator 2, and like watching them back to back, like, is a very rewarding experience, I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of just really good tie-ins. They do really well. When you watch them closely, you're like, oh, like, it's, you know, the things you sort of miss that are like interconnected in the storylines are like really, really solid. Yeah.
So Joe, maybe you can answer this because you know some about the Predator. At the end of the movie of Predator 2, they show them like going down underground to this ship that has like an untold number of predators, and then they like it like comes out of the ground, like flies away. How the fuck did it get there? Had it been there for like hundreds of years? Like they've been living on Earth? Like it's, that's the one like question is that I guess it's meant to be like they're just here, you know, on Earth.
Yeah.
And how do they, no one know they were around? I don't know. It's like stupid questions that no one needs to know the answer to.
The kind of theory is they were in like the sewers, and that's what they flew out of. But I remember, because when the ship takes off, it's just sort of like a blinding light and it's gone. And I was like, that seems difficult. They weren't there for a long time. Like the first, the opening scene is the first time the Predator starts killing again on Earth, at least in this lore, which is why Gary Busey and the FBI shows up. The idea there is that they're kind of like testing the new warriors. Like they have to be initiated in some ways.
Okay.
Yeah. In, I think it's more obvious in Predators, which I love, but they have, like dreads and marks on their face for their number of kills and stuff like that. And so in these ones, I'm not sure about the first one, but I know in the second one, it's supposedly a quote unquote junior Predator, like one being, initiated. So that's kind of the
Predators.
Theory.
Is Predators the one with like Topher Grace?
Yeah.
Yes.
And Adrian Brody is like the main character.
Yeah.
Okay. It's, yeah. I don't think, I think I saw that once when it came out. That's not,
I love it. I think it's like really just like sort of takes a lot of the concepts, but like fleshes out a lot of the like really interesting dynamics and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Walter Goggins is in it too. I fucking love him.
Yeah.
I just looked it up.
He's great. That's a great movie, and it is a lot more just like actiony, well, because they're not even on Earth.
It kind of ties in what we were talking about, this idea, right? That like, you know, so it's like, yeah, well, the war zone that you would go to was Central America, and like in 1997, it's like it's these urban battlegrounds. Because in a sense, in Predators, it's like they go and snatch these people from all the big war zone, right? They get one guy from like Chechnya and one guy from like the Yakuza, right? So the sense is like
IDF,
right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, of course, right? Yeah, anywhere where like big battles and conflict is happening, like that's where they go, right? Like they want to be in the thick of those sort of things. And sort of Predators kind of like makes that very clear. Like this is like, you know, that's, you'll find them there essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I need to give that one a rewatch. It's been, I don't think I've actually seen it since it, maybe when it came out in what, 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was 2010.
Yeah. This point's been a few years. Yeah.
They also made The Predator in 2018, which is one of the worst movies ever.
Oh, it's terrible.
I was so looking forward to it. And it was like, I think it was a studio being like, hey, the Marvel movies are doing really good. Can we do that with the Predator? It's like PG-13, I think. And they don't, they like are always saying like Tony Stark-esque like quips and stuff. Yeah. And it's just so horrible.
I would say it's the worst in the whole series, except I think Alien versus Predator 2 is worse. That movie is like unwatchable to me. Like it's like has a lot of like teen kind of like bullshit, like the nerdy guy who's like wants the girl who's with like the jerk.
Yeah.
And it's like everything bad. I'm like, this is just, I can't do it.
Yeah. FX is making an alien show, and it's going to take place on Earth. And they've already come out and said like, we're just ignoring the Alien versus Predator movies. Like pretend they didn't happen.
When they reset that, they're like, oh, we're just going to pretend.
With Sigourney Weaver, because I heard they're going to like reboot the kind of with her, and they're going to just start after basically Aliens and just like ignore the other three or four and just be like, we're just going to take it off from there where things went really haywire, basically.
I was just going to say, I don't know. Yeah.
I know that there's going to be a new Ridley Scott standalone Alien movie. I think maybe that's the one you're thinking, but I don't think that Sigourney Weaver is in it. I know that it's directed by Ridley Scott, though, or he's involved in some way, probably producer. But I don't know. It'd be pretty cool if they brought back, you know, I did Alien on this podcast. I need to do Aliens because I, you know,
oh, it's great.
It is a Ridley Scott like creation, but James Cameron did some pretty sweet shit in Aliens.
Yeah, no, Aliens is great. Well, but he went. I know everyone hated Prometheus. I actually thought Prometheus was okay, but Alien Covenant was like, he just went rogue on that one. Like, had a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know, Joe or Keith, any last thoughts on the Predator double feature?
I liked it. I enjoyed it so much watching the movies back to back. I watched them one night after another. I thought, as you said, it was really cool to see the through lines, and it's more evident what the filmmakers are trying to say. Great movie. Predator 1, one of my all-time favorites, and Predator 2 was way better than I imagined or remembered. Sorry. So I'd say give it a watch if you're looking for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. After we've despoiled all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Still watch it.
Predator 1, classic. I mean, probably one of my top 10 favorite movies. Like Predator 2, I think it's like, it's got a lot going on, and it's like, you know, it's kind of a little bit over the top, but overall, like, it's still an enjoyable watch. Got a good, you know, good return to the sort of universe of the first.
Yeah. I think it does well as being watched in tandem as opposed to maybe like, oh, just one day you put on Predator 2. I mean, I think as a standalone film, it's good, but I think as the combining of the two gives them a good watch. But yeah, I mean, I don't have anything else on these movies. I think, again, you know, these are not just your boring action movies. I mean, not boring. Boring's the wrong word. They're not just like your regular action movies. They have, you know, something to say. You know, I've obviously done crummy movies on this show that don't maybe have a lot to say, or the things they have to say suck. You know, they don't have good things to say, but these, I think, you know, and I'm glad you suggested them, Joe, to do it. So,
hey, man,
so great. Just, Keith and Joe, thank you both for coming on.
Of course. I'm always just looking to geek out about my favorite stuff. So
yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but I guess that was you spoil. I didn't know that you were like really into the Phantom stuff. So that.
Oh, yeah.
To the stuff that I would never have known.
The Alien cool. Predator world has good politics. So it's a cool thing to go down if you're looking for comic books and novels and stuff.
Kind of missing from both like Predator and Alien and RoboCop, which also have great critiques of like corporate America. That's not as sort of prominent in Predator, but like, yeah.
All those, the '80s had some just such great, I mean, even though '90s, but for Predator too, but the '80s and those movies critiquing like the Reagan era is just unmatched in like movie decades. Like I think of action movies now and they're just, I guess they're all fucking Marvel movies.
That's all we have anymore. And basically, as far as I can tell, have nothing worthy of like political, social analysis. I mean, maybe people that watch them more religiously than I do have something to say, but I watch them like, I can't possibly get meaningful social commentary out of this.
No, I did an episode on one Marvel movie that will be coming out way before. Coming out tomorrow. Well, I'll cut this part, but the Iron Man 2, someone else suggested doing it. Not like, it's not a good movie. It fucking sucks.
Yeah.
But like the politics on like the military industrial complex, like the influence of military on Marvel movies, I think that's the only relatively valid discussion point. And you could just say that about any of them. Like, oh, there's this crappy movie. It was made by the DOD and it sucks and it has no heart.
Iron Man 2, the one with Elon Musk in it.
It is one with Elon Musk.
Is the one that has that weird like Mandarin character that, right? That's like,
it ends it's the, no, it's a Russian, the Russian one. It's, what's his name? The wrestler, fucking, I can't remember, I think it was.
Oh name. Yeah. From
Rourke, Mickey Rourke.
Oh, see, I thought that was
Iron Man. Like a Russian.
I thought that was Iron Man 3. Maybe I'm mixing them up.
I think that's Iron Man 3, the one with the Mandarin.
Yeah, okay.
They all suck.
Yeah.
Very easy to blur them. There's a bad guy from a foreign country.
Yeah.
He's got to shoot the laser.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like someone was saying recently, like, how can you reboot Avengers, like, after they've defeated, like, the thing that was the most dangerous thing that ever existed? Like, there's nothing left to do. Like, just fucking stop. Because
what was it? Was a big flop, right? Like Black Adam or whatever. I feel like after that, they're starting to get like that some of them are like losing money for the first time, right? Like
the Mrs. Marvel one, the one that just came out, I think that lost money.
Yeah, yeah.
The new Ant-Man, like whatever one, I don't think did well.
Yeah, I think it's just like
they're rebooting Avengers.
Oh, they are.
Stupid. Yeah, oh, with damn. Some of the people that were in the original Avengers and a bunch of new people.
That's the problem with comic book movies, is comic books could just be like, we all fell into a black hole and we're on a different Earth now and we're resetting. And
right. People are like, well, that's cool, the thing.
But it doesn't work in movies. Yeah.
That's the thing with like Spider-Man. They could be like, oh, it's a different universe. So here's Spider-Man 56 universe, whatever. At least Spider-Man, they're making some like good animated movies. But
yeah. No, I'm just so superhero movies, like, they do nothing for me anymore. No. Like they have no me. I'd rather watch Predator like 50 more times.
Almost anything I'd rather watch. Yeah. Now. Like my kids are like, oh, do you want to watch a Marvel? I'm like, no, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
You can watch it on your own.
Yeah.
Fuck.